It's the saddest words in the Bible, but he did not know that the Lord had left him. He did not know that the Lord had left him. I think so many of us start off great in our walk with God, and we want to do what's right, but over time, the things of this world continually cut away at our strength in God, and we get focused on the wrong things, and then one day we wake up and we did not know that the Lord had left us. That song that Jason just led is so appropriate for Father's Day, and you don't even know why. When I was a young lad, probably about 10, maybe 12 years old, we would go camping at Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And we would camp. My mom and dad had a pop-up trailer that they used, and they made us sleep in tents on the ground. So my sister got to stay with them, but us boys, we all had to stay on the ground. Well, one night, my cousin and my younger brother decided to take off and walk around the campground. And as they were walking around, they saw a giant switch on a pole. And they thought, this must turn something off. And the two of them grabbed the switch and turned it off, and it shut down the power for half the camp. Well, it didn't take long before two boys got really guilty looking, and everybody figured out that they did it. And they got in so much trouble. I enjoyed it so much because it was not me. But the thing that I'll never forget about that is that night I'm sitting in my tent, my uncle and my dad are sitting there, and all of a sudden I heard my dad, "Tempted and tried." And every time I hear that song, I think about my dad and that event. Happy Father's Day to you. This is Father's Day, and I got to tell you, I always want to do something really cool for Father's Day, something kind of macho. I heard about a guy that drove a Harley Davidson into the church for Father's Day for the dads and revved it and did all that. I thought about doing that, but I would probably fall over and break a leg or something like that. But what I really want to do today is I want to talk to you about a man's man. When I was growing up, we heard all the stories from the Old Testament, constantly read the stories from the Old Testament. And one of my favorite stories was a story about a man named Samson. And Samson was my favorite because Samson was strong. I mean, he was so strong, if you look in the scriptures, you will see that at one point he's walking along and a lion jumps out at him and he tears the lion apart with his bare hands like you would a young goat. Now, my friend Jason right here, he's a strong guy. He works out. I know this for a fact. But I can tell you this, I don't think Jason could take a young goat and tear it apart. And even if he could, none of us would want to see it. But to think about somebody doing that with a lion as a kid, that was just awesome, right? But I always thought Samson was the bad guy because he didn't do what God said he was supposed to do. And this story was one of those conflicts for me, whether he was a victor or whether he was a villain. And as I read the story again and again, I began to see things about Samson that I never saw before. But when I was preparing this lesson, I was thinking about his mom and dad. Because this is Father's Day, and we got to think about dads in particular. And he had a fantastic dad. Now, mom got to talk to the angel of the Lord, but dad had some really interesting things. If you look at your lesson notes at the scripture that was read to you, if you look down at the bottom of verse 5, and it talks about Samson, and it says, He will take the lead in delivering Israel from the hands of the Philistines. Just underline those words, because Samson, before he was ever born, God had a plan for him, and he was to take the lead of delivering the Israelites from the Philistines. But here's the thing that I really like about this. The very last verse, verse 8, Manoah. That's a great name, isn't it? Manoah. Manoah prayed to the Lord, and listen to how he prayed, the humility that he prayed. Pardon your servant, Lord. I love that, because a lot of times we come to God and we don't really think about the holy God that we're coming to when we pray. But he says, pardon your servant, Lord. I beg you, let the man of God you sent to us come again, and underline these words, to teach us how to bring up the boy who is to be born. Nancy and I were discussing our kids recently. And I know that they're not perfect. I don't even pretend that they're perfect. But they are close to it, because they're my kids. But we were talking about that, and talking about how fortunate we were that both of our sons are serving the Lord. Both of our sons love their wives, and they're just doing great in this life. They're helping people, and they're doing good things. And we were just talking about how blessed we are because of that. And Nancy said to me, all of those prayers didn't go wasted. And I want to tell you, fathers today, I don't care how old or young your children are, be a man that prays for your children. Because there are so many times in my life with those boys that it could have gone the wrong way. And as a matter of fact, when I think about being their father and how well they turned out, I think to myself, boy, they missed a bullet on that one. Because I am so far from perfect. But I can tell you who makes up the difference. It's God makes up the difference. Fathers, pray for your children. It says in verse 5, you will become pregnant and have a son whose head is never to be touched by a razor, because the boy is to be a Nazarite. And those of you who grew up in the church and you heard that all your life and you know about the Nazarite vows and all the things that go along with this, you're going, yeah, I know exactly what that means. But for the majority of us, we need to know what a Nazarite is. And if you'll open up your sermon note, what is the Nazarite vow? And it comes from Numbers chapter 6. And it's an optional thing. It's not something you had to do. But if you wanted to do it, you could do it. And you would take a vow for a season. And if you go back and you read Numbers 6, it'll tell you what it's all about. So it's a season of dedicating yourself to God. And I'm not saying that this is something everybody needs to do, but I think it's a great idea if we as men would take a season, a period of time, and we would dedicate ourselves to God. I know when I started the construction company that I had to start, that was a season where I had to work two jobs, and I didn't mind, because it was going to help provide for my family and allow me to continue to preach. But I knew it was not going to be forever. And men, you need to have a season in your life. And I don't know whether it's going to be a year or a month or whatever. And for some of you, you might want to just start off with a week, because, you know, you're weak. And you want to start off with that season where you dedicate yourself to God. The second thing is they were to have no wine and no grapes. No wine and no grapes. I guess that meant they couldn't have raisins either, but it doesn't say that. But no wine and no grapes. And so this was the time they were going to abstain from alcohol. And in this particular story, his mother was told, you're not to have anything to drink either. And then the second thing was they were to have no haircuts. No haircuts whatsoever. And I guess part of the reason why I liked this when I was a kid, because every summer we started off our summer by getting a buzz cut. Because men were not to have long hair. And it was the 60s, okay? Guess what? Everybody had long hair except for me. And I got buzz cut at the beginning of the summer, and then at the end of the summer, they did it again. And my hair never got long enough, and that's the reason why I was weak. I knew it. So they were to have no haircuts. And number three, there was no touching dead things. There was no touching dead things. And this was a part of that Nazirite vow. And this was part of what Samson was supposed to be doing. And the reason why I want you to see this is because as we go through this story, and I don't have time to go through every verse. I'm just hitting some highlights here. And men in particular, I would encourage you to read this story from beginning to end all the way through, because it is such a dynamic story. And in this, we want to find out what went wrong with Samson. And I've got some points in here. And first of all, he was looking for love in all the wrong places. He was looking for love in all the wrong places. And you see it here in Judges chapter 14. Samson went down to Timnah and saw a young Philistine woman. When he returned, he said to his father and mother, I have seen a Philistine woman in Timnah, and underline these words, now get her for me as my wife. In Deuteronomy chapter 7, we are told that the Israelites were not to marry outside of that. And so his father and mother replied, isn't there an acceptable woman among your relatives or among all our people? Must you go to the uncircumcised Philistines to get a wife? But Samson said to his father, get her for me. She's the right one for me. And it goes on to say, his parents did not know that this was from the Lord, who was seeking an occasion to confront the Philistines, for at that time they were ruling over Israel. And it was during this time that Samson was going along with his parents to meet this woman to set up this marriage that he runs across this lion, and the lion attacks him, and he just kills that lion, rips him apart, and throws him off the side of the road. And I was thinking about that. What animal could I rip apart? And the only thing that I could think of is when I have chicken wings, I don't have any trouble ripping them apart. But in this story, it's so interesting to me that it says his parents did not know this was from the Lord. And you can look at that several different ways, but I think the way that we should look at this is God will use our bad decisions to accomplish his will. God can use our bad decisions to accomplish his will. One of the ways you can look at this is God's going to draw a straight line even with a crooked stick. And so what I want you to hear in this particular story is that Samson was being used by God even in his bad decisions. Number two, he's taking his eyes off the road. He took his eyes off the road. And I see this all the time here in Tampa. Amen? I cannot believe the number of people that I have seen driving down the road with their phone on their steering wheel. And that's against the law, in case you didn't know that. But you take your eyes off the road for just a minute. I remember one day I was going to see someone, and I took my eyes off the road for just a minute to see something, and the next thing I know, I'd gotten off the road. Look at what Samson did here. Sometime later, he went back to marry her, And underline these words, he turned aside to look at the lion's carcass. And in it he saw a swarm of bees and some honey. And I want you to realize that in that he took some of the honey. He decided, I'm going to eat this honey. So what was he doing? He was breaking his Nazirite vow because he was taking something from a dead animal. And if you read the story, it goes on a little bit further, and it says he got some honey for himself, but he also got some from his parents. And his parents must have been really good parents because he didn't tell him where he got the honey from. Because they would have scolded him, I think. Just like they scolded him when he wanted to marry a Philistine woman. So the third thing that he did is he was betting against the house. So he was betting against the house. What happened here was when he was betting against the house is he went over here to marry this woman and he was an outsider. And I understand how that can be. I married Nancy in Jacksonville, Florida. I was from the Carolinas. Other than my family, I knew no one there. And Nancy had her whole church family come through the line and threaten me. You'd better be good to her or else. Like, okay, I plan on doing that. And then the next person, you'd better be good to her or else. I'm like, what's going on here? And then I found out Nancy's mom and dad paid those people to do that. But the thing of it is when you're in another land, you can't bet against the house. And so what he did is he had these 30 companions because he had no family that was there other than his close family, his mother and father. He had no companions with him for this marriage. So they gave him 30 companions. You need some groomsmen, let's find you some. And so he got 30 of them. So he says to them, I have a riddle for you guys. He's breaking the ice. He says, out of the eater comes something to eat. Out of the eater is something sweet. If you can figure out that riddle, I'm going to give you 30 pairs of clothes, including underwear, for you to wear. But if you can't figure it out, you've got to give me 30 pairs. Now, I don't know how that worked, whether it was a bet, they shook hands on it, or anything like that, but I know that was what was going on. And during that time, his wife wanted to know because they had threatened her by burning the house down and killing everyone. And when they threatened that, she began to beg him. And for 7 days, she cried. Or maybe it was 4 out of the 7 days, she cried to him. But she cried to him and cried to him, please tell me. And look at what it says right here. Then Samson's wife threw herself on him, sobbing. You hate me. You don't really love me. You've given my people a riddle, but you haven't told me the answer. Samson says, wait a minute here, dear. I haven't even explained it to my father or mother. So why should I explain it to you? And she cried the whole 7 days of the feast. So on the 7th day, he finally told her because she continued to press him. She in turn explained the riddle to her people. Before sunset on the 7th day, the men of Israel, the town, said to him, what is sweeter than honey and what is stronger than a lion? And Samson says the most profound words in all of the Old Testament. If you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle. Now, I would love to spend some time talking to you about the doctrinal implications of plowing with someone else's heifer. But we just don't have the time today, okay? So you're going to have to go home and figure it out for yourself. But when I was a teenager and I read that, I laughed for an hour because I never knew that kind of stuff was in the Bible. And so what happens after that is they've solved the riddle, so he has to go and get clothing for all these guys. So what does he do? He kills 30 Philistine men and takes their clothing and then gives it to them. So he took care of his part of the bet. But can you imagine getting somebody's underwear that had been killed in it? I'm just saying, I'm not so sure this was a good deal for anybody. But anyway, he goes back and he's trying to make amends. And of course, everybody knows he's the one that killed these people. And it says in 15 verse 1, later on at the time of the wheat harvest, Samson took a young goat and he went to visit his wife. And number four there is thinking about selfie. Thinking about selfie. Now, they did not have selfies in those days, but I think a lot of times we spend too much time thinking about ourselves. Later on, the time of the wheat harvest, Samson took a young goat and went to visit his wife and said, I'm going to my wife's room, but her father would not let him go in. I was so sure you hated her, he said, that I gave her to your companion. And this is what the father says. Isn't her younger sister more attractive? This is some weird stuff. I was so sure you hated her, I gave her to your companion. Isn't her younger sister more attractive? Take her instead. And Samson said to them, this time, and I want you to underline these words, I have a right to get even. This time, I have a right to get even with the Philistines, and I will really harm them. And of course, he did. And then they went and killed his wife's family, burned them, the very thing they threatened him with, they did. And so number five, after she's dead, he's in the wrong place. It says right here, one day Samson went to Gaza where he saw a prostitute. He went in and spent the night with her. Now Gaza was the place that they did all of their worshiping. The Philistines did all of their worshiping. That's where their idols were. That's where their temple was. That was not the place for an Israelite to be. So here he is. He's got God's blessing. He's got all this strength. And he goes in there. And then number six, he was with the wrong woman. And the wrong woman here, you guys have heard of her before. Her name is Delilah. So he told her everything. And you got to remember this. Three times he lies to her and calls the Philistines in. He kills the Philistines and he goes on his way. Three times that happens. Women, if you're with a man that lies to you three times, he should be out of there. And here's the other side of it. Men, if you have a woman that tries to get you captured or killed three times, you need to get out of there. Okay? It's simple math. All right? I would say to you, if your wife tries to kill you the first time, you might want to rethink your relationship. So here we go. They have a very toxic relationship. This is the end of it. So he told her everything. No razor has ever been used on my head. He said, because I have been a Nazarite dedicated to God from my mother's womb. As a matter of fact, one of the things that's funny is he told her in one of the lies, if you take my hair and you braid it in the loom with a rug, then they'll be able to capture me. And I had this picture because he pulls the pin on the loom when they come to get him and fights all these guys off. And I think to myself, what did it look like with Samson having a rug coming down his back for me in the loom there? And he does all this, but this time he tells her the truth. Because I've been a Nazarite dedicated to God from my mother's womb, if my head were shaved, my strength would leave me, and I would become as weak as any other man. Then Delilah saw that he had told her everything and sent word to the rulers of the Philistines. They were going to pay her some bucks. Come back once more, he's told me everything. So the rulers of the Philistines returned with silver in their hands. After putting him to sleep on her lap, she called for someone to shave off the seven braids of his hair, and so began to subdue him, and his strength left him. This is what happened to me every summer when I got the buzz cut. Then she called Samson, fourth time, the Philistines are upon you. And he awoke from his sleep and thought, I'll go out as before and shake myself free. And I want you to underline these words because it's the saddest words in the Bible. But he did not know that the Lord had left him. He did not know that the Lord had left him. I think so many of us start off great in our walk with God, and we want to do what's right, but over time, the things of this world continually cut away at our strength in God, and we get focused on the wrong things, and then one day, we wake up, and we did not know that the Lord had left us. So, what can we learn from this story? Number one, it's never too late to come home. It's never too late to come home. The story of Samson, when you think about this right now, he's captured, they poked his eyes out, they put him in the prison, and they're making him pull things to trod grain. And they have this big party, this big festival, and they all bring him into the temple there. And he's in the temple, and they decide, well, we got Samson. Let's bring him out and let him entertain us. And I don't know what he did to entertain him, because I don't know what a blind man would do to entertain, unless they just had him walking around running into things, okay? That's the only thing I could figure that would be entertaining with that. Or maybe they had him do some strength exercises. I don't know. But they brought him home. Brought him in. It says, so while they were in high spirits, that means they were as drunk as a skunk, okay? While they were in high spirits, they shouted, bring out Samson to entertain us. So they called Samson out of the prison, and he performed for them. When they stood him among the pillars, Samson said to the servant who held his hand, put me where I can feel the pillars that support the temple so that I may lean against them. Now the temple was crowded with men and women. All the rulers of the Philistines were there. And on the roof were about 3,000 men and women watching Samson perform. Then Samson prayed to the Lord. Sovereign Lord, remember me. Please, God, strengthen me just once more. And let me with one blow get revenge on the Philistines for my two eyes. Then Samson reached toward the two pillars on which the temple stood, bracing himself against them, his right hand on one and his left hand on the other. Samson said, let me die with the Philistines. Then he pushed with all of his might, and down came the temple of the rulers and all the people. And I want you to underline this. Thus he killed many more when he died than when he lived. And in my mind, I see this as a tragedy. He died. He never reached his full potential. But one of the things that I learned later in life, in Hebrews chapter 11, I think it's verse 32, Samson is mentioned among the heroes of faith. So it's not a tragedy. Because he died after he returned to God. The reason why I say that to you is because so many people come around me and they have had tragic lives. They've done things that have been against the Lord. They have sinned in awful ways. They have had all kinds of issues come up in their life. And it could be parental things. It could be children things. And they have all this stuff that has happened in their life. And when they have all this stuff happen in their life, they're thinking to themselves, there is no way that I can come back to the Lord. I will never forget being in my 20s, and a young college student asked if she could talk to me. I have no idea why people want to tell me things. But she wanted to talk to me. I wasn't a preacher then. Nancy and I were newly married, and she came to me and she says, is there any way I can talk to you? I was teaching Bible class. And I said, sure. So we sat down and she began to cry. And as she began to cry, she says, I know there is no way that God can forgive me for what I have done. And I was just a young man in my 20s, and I'm thinking, what is she going to tell me? I had no idea. Well, it turns out she had had an abortion a few years ago, and she said, there is no way God can forgive me of that. And I said, all you have to do is ask. And the problem wasn't so much that God can't forgive her. The problem is that she couldn't forgive herself. And so many times, the things that have happened in our life, the circumstances we have found are in, the bad things that we have done, the sin that we have created in our life, we can't forgive ourselves. But I want to tell you right now, God can forgive anything. All you have to do is turn to Him. And that's what Samson did. So it didn't make this story a tragedy. This made Samson a victor. And I don't know where you are in your walk with God right now, but I want you to know it's never too late to come back to God. God's plan number two, God's plan B is never as good as His plan A. God had a plan for Samson, and He had this idea. Samson was going to help free the Israelites from the Philistines, and he was going to do all this, and as he was going to do all this, he was going to use Samson to do this. He made him strong to do this, but Samson had his own ideas of what he wanted. From the very beginning, you saw where Samson said about marrying the girl, the Philistine girl, she is right for me. Because of the fact that he ignored what God said is right for him, he didn't get the blessings that he could have gotten. Now, it wouldn't have been as interesting story, I don't think, but I want you to hear this. In your life, God has a plan A for you, and that is for you to follow His word. But even if you don't follow His word, sometimes He has a plan B, but it's not as good. Jeremiah 18 says, this is the word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord. Go down to the potter's house where I will give you a message. So I went down to the potter's house and I saw him working at the wheel. But the pot he was shaping from clay was marred in his hand. So the potter formed it into another pot, shaping it as he seemed best to him. Then the word of the Lord came to me. Can I not do with you, Israel, as the potter does, declares the Lord. Like clay in the hands of the potter, so are you in my hand, Israel. There's so much in the Bible that teaches us about life and godliness. And there are so many of us who are children of God in the church, baptized believers that are walking through life, not letting God use us the way He wants. And because of that, He sometimes reshapes our life. He molds you into something you may not want to be. And His plan A, if you will follow it, is going to be so much better than His plan B. Number three. Success doesn't mean you have God's approval. Success doesn't mean you have God's approval. I have to tell myself this all the time because God has blessed Nancy and I beyond our imagination. We could have never guessed that God was going to do the things in our life that He has done. And because of that, a lot of times I think to myself, well, it's because I am a good guy. It's because I teach Bible classes. It's because I've dedicated my life to other people. No, it's because God blessed me, not because of anything I have done. And my success doesn't necessarily mean that I have God's approval. As a matter of fact, as I was writing this lesson, I was thinking about the things that I have done in my lifetime that could have gone so wrong if God had not
decided differently for me. The fourth thing I want you to remember, and especially for you men, guard your heart or you lose your mind. Guard your heart or you lose your mind. Men today, there are so many temptations out in the world today. There are so many things that draw our attention away from God, and we have to guard our hearts or we'll end up losing our mind. And I've watched more men fall because they didn't guard their heart. Each Lord's Day, we sing an invitation song, and we sing that invitation song. So if somebody needs to respond in a public way, they can come forward. We can pray for you. If you need to be baptized so that you can walk a new life with Christ, we can do that. But the reason why we sing this invitation song is we want to encourage each other to leave here changed, not the same person we came in. And we're going to sing, and we're not singing because we want people to come forward. We're singing because we want to encourage each other. You talk about encouragement. This morning, I watched three teenage girls come sit down front. And when they came and sat down front, guess what they did? They became the most beautiful women in this church. I want you to realize, when we encourage each other, we become beautiful to each other. But more importantly, we become beautiful to God. The lesson is yours as we stand and sing.